Today, the big lie about first home buyer grants. Hello again, it's Martin North from Digital Finance Analytics, one of the latest posts covering finance and problem news with a distinctively Australian flavour. In recent years, we've seen a swathe of initiatives from state and federal governments with the aim of encouraging and helping more first-time buyers into the housing market. The previous government claimed they'd helped hundreds of thousands into the market. And the latest ABS statistics shows that the number of first-time buyers is actually falling again. Typically, over the past decade, approximately 92,000 households have become first home buyers annually. Setting this value against the total number of residential property sales for the period, first home buyer transactions have typically represented around 20% of total annual residential property transactions. Importantly, though, first home buyer activity has varied significantly over time and space, reflecting both market conditions and policy settings. And in fact, past peaks map directly onto government stimulus measures. The latest is the Albanese government release of 40,000 new places under the federal government's Home Guarantee Scheme, which will, they say, enable eligible first home buyers to purchase a property with a deposit of as little as 2 or 5%. This is at a time when the Reserve Bank of Australia is aggressively increasing rates and home prices are expected to plunge somewhere between 10 and 20%, depending on the forecast. So what could possibly go wrong? In fact, the evidence suggests that these schemes are ineffective. Indeed, the long-term trends in terms of home ownership shows that across Australia, a smaller proportion of people own their own home outright, and those that have mortgages tend to have them for longer. The latest census data, which is still in the process of being released, continues to confirm this trend. Home ownership rates in Australia, in fact, declined over several decades, and the likelihood of attaining home ownership by the age of 30 has fallen substantially. If you go back two decades, the average age of a first-time buyer was around 27 years. Today, it's 34 years and rising, based on my surveys. In addition, especially in Sydney, Melbourne and Perth, first home buyers are now buying fewer homes and more units, and evidence shows that more are also receiving parental assistance. Also, while mortgage repayment affordability stresses have been cushioned by falling interest rates until 2022, mortgage deposit requirements have risen with prices and become an increasingly serious constraint, far more so in Sydney and Melbourne than elsewhere. Now, I've long argued that this first home owner grant system are bribes which distorts the market. It lifts prices and are designed more to assist the construction sector. In other words, first-time buyer grants are a con. So I read with interest a new report from Ahuri, a national independent research network with an expert not-for-profit research management company, Ahuri Limited, at its centre, which aims to deliver high-quality research to influence policy development and practice change to improve the housing and urban environments for all Australians. And they show that many first home buyer assistance programs benefit existing homeowners rather than new homeowners, thereby compounding the problem of access and risk that such schemes are supposedly meant to address. The research, Assisting First Home Buyers, an international policy review, undertaken for Ahuri by researchers from the University of New South Wales, RMIT University and the University of Sydney, examines first home buyer assistance programs in Australia and seven comparator countries, Canada, Finland, Germany, Ireland, the Netherlands, Singapore and the UK. The study assesses the effectiveness of such assistance in expanding access to home ownership to those whose entry would otherwise be delayed or indeed be impossible, or in making the cost of home ownership more affordable and less risky. First-time buyer interventions can be demand-side or supply-side measures. A demand-side intervention involves a benefit directly received by the consumer, effectively boosting first-home buyer purchasing power, and includes home buyer grants and tax concessions, low deposit mortgage products and shared equity arrangements. Supply-side interventions directly relate to the provision or use of housing. This covers the disposal of government-owned assets, funding channeled through property developers or suppliers, and regulatory instruments that affect housing production or the use of housing assets. The eight countries assessed have substantial diversity in terms of policy approaches to supporting home ownership. Supply-side approaches are more common in the number of comparator countries. Current Australian first home buyer assistance measures primarily act to bring forward first home purchase for householders already close to doing so, rather than opening home ownership access to households otherwise excluded, says the report author Dr. Chris Martin of the City Futures Research Centre. These measures simply add to the demand and push up property prices, and the amount of public funds spent on these schemes is huge, more than $20 billion over the past decade. According to the research, the most prominent forms of first home buyer assistance in Australia during the past two decades has been demand-side interventions, which involves a benefit directly received by the consumer. These include rules governing mortgage lending, for example, low deposit mortgage products, first home buyer grant schemes, and tax concessions such as stamp duty savings. Unlike most of the international comparison countries, Australia stands out as it overwhelmingly uses demand-side instruments and lacks a strategic framework, says Dr. Martin. And unlike countries such as Finland and Singapore, Australian governments have resisted prioritising first-home buyers' genuine interests by reforming tax settings that favour the housing market competitors, established homeowners and would-be rental investors. Compared with policy approaches in most comparator countries, supply-side measures that would increase the number of affordable homes suitable for first-home buyers in Australia are very thinly represented, according to the report. More than $20.5 billion in 2021 dollars terms was expended by Australian governments in stamp duty concessions and cash grants, including Home Builder, to first-home buyers in the decade to 2021. Even before the economic stimulus response to COVID-19, these forms of assistance were escalating up from $1.2 billion to almost $3 billion in the 4 years from 2016, and new demand-side measures have been added, such as the National Housing Finance and Investment Corporation, the NHFIC, Low Deposit Mortgage Scheme. Strikingly, the annual value of tax expenditures trebled to $2.2 billion in the 4 years to 2020. Notably, on a per capita basis, the scale of such subsidies has become comparatively large. For example, in the latest years for which data is available, the benefit per home buyer averaged over $16,000 in both New South Wales and Victoria, as compared with $4,000 in the UK. Tax theory suggests that concessions such as these impact property prices in a similar manner to direct grants, such as first homeowner grants. Distinct peaks of first home buyer acquisition activity were seen at the beginning and the end of the past decade. These outliers are noteworthy because of the targeted policies put in place during those periods that were motivated by acute macroeconomic developments, but which were specifically targeted at first home buyers. In particular, the pattern is generally understood as reflecting the impact of time-limited first home buyer cash grant schemes that form components of economic stimulus programs associated with the response to the GFC, and more recently the economic downturn associated with the COVID-19 pandemic. The large-scale state support seen in the decades from 1945 to 1975 was undoubtedly instrumental in the strongly rising home ownership rate seen during that era. Importantly, these interventions included major supply-side programs, especially direct housing build for sale provision, as well as public rental housing privatisation. While largely implemented by state governments and their agencies, these were substantially led and financially supported by the Commonwealth government. Such measures were importantly complemented by large-scale demand-side assistance, especially in the form of state-backed concessional mortgages, as well as by regulatory preferencing for first-home buyer lending. However, over the past 30 years, in tune with the dominant neoliberal mode of governance, the focus has shifted almost entirely to demand-side assistance. The main emphasis now is on boosting first home buyer purchasing power through cash grants and tax concessions, and on enabling access to low deposit loans. Because they enable a marginal first home buyer to outbid others and set a new higher price in the market, they fundamentally increase house prices. By comparison with some comparator countries, Australia's approach is extremely one-sided. An important change of emphasis in the efforts of Australian governments to assist first home buyers in recent times has been the growing priority accorded to promoting home ownership access as opposed to affordability. This is exemplified in schemes to facilitate first home buyer low deposit mortgages, given the increasingly stringent challenge posed by the required scale of down payments. That seems a logical progression. Along with the Home Start and Key Start program sponsored by the South Australian and Western Australian governments, the NHFIC First Home Loan Deposit Guarantee Scheme can be assessed as such, but such initiatives appear to be constrained partly by an official concern to avoid over-encroachment on the commercial mortgage industry and its market share. At least as far as the FHLDS is concerned, there may also be recognition that in the absence of complementary supply-side intervention, the provision of such assistance has many inflationary impacts. This may be an additional factor underlying the capping of FHLDS assistance, so that in any given year, only a fairly small minority of first-home buyers may benefit. Whether or not declared as such, the reality is that contemporary demand-side efforts to assist first-home buyers both in Australia and in comparator countries enable owner occupancy at an earlier point than would otherwise be possible, rather than lifting home ownership rates in a systematic manner over the course of the life cycle. Unlike some of the counterpart governments in the UK and elsewhere in Europe, Australian authorities have in recent decades largely chosen to eschew mechanisms that directly subsidise or others enable the supply of homes suitable for or reserved for first home buyers. Similarly, again, in contrast with at least two of comparator countries, Australia nowadays makes no routine use of financial regulation powers to restrain established owners and investors from out-leveraging and outbidding first home buyers. So as this report shows, in some comparator countries, significant supply-side first-home buyer assistance programs and mechanisms continue to operate. Perhaps the most important examples are the use of land use planning regulation requiring developer contributions of affordable housing for sale as well as for rent, as in Germany, Ireland, the Netherlands and the UK. Government land development to produce first-home buyer appropriate dwellings, as in Finland, Netherlands and Singapore. And similarly, although this relates to a form of assistance we define as demand side, federal, state and territory governments in Australia have until now pledged comparatively little commitment to the SE model of state-assisted private housing acquisition. Admittedly, as operated at large scale in the UK and Ireland, this can call for substantial initial publicly funded investment, but because the equity share typically attracts a charge or is required to be repaid after a prescribed period, these schemes have the nature of a revolving fund and achieve a greater efficiency of subsidy. However, there is a question as to whether shared equity repayment requirement is really equitable, as it falls only on participating first-home buyers, while others who are not assisted, except perhaps by access to parental housing wealth, stand to take all the gains on their properties. It's possible to envisage these schemes as allowing assisted households to get onto the first rung of the housing ladder, but then the second rung telescopes away from them. And to the extent that these schemes further entrench in governments a view that rising house prices are always welcome because it enhances their own equity stakes, they may divert official attention from the more fundamental reforms required to make home ownership more accessible and affordable, reforms that steadily cream off unearthed returns to property. And they said it's also instructive on how land use planning powers can be effectively used to stipulate development of low-priced dwellings for sale within market housing developments. There is scope for so much more active supply-side contributions to the housing situation via state land development agencies, and such agencies already exist at state and territory level, but unlike counterparty entities in countries such as Germany, Finland, Ireland and the Netherlands, they nowadays lack a strong mandate for improving affordability. Such objectives are constrained by commercial imperatives of Treasury frameworks, which have seen divided objectives trump broader social and economic policy goals. As a consequence, states have relied on deal-based and brokered negotiations with developers, justified according to the legal obligations for all state-owned corporations to act as commercially as any equivalent private sector entity. When it comes to demand-side assistance, the strong consensus among industry experts and academics is that schemes like loans, guarantees, and shared equity instruments should be favoured over grants and concessions. Importantly, as emphasised earlier, loans, guarantees, and shared equity instruments tend to be implemented through revolving fund structures and repayable assistance rather than government-funded gifts. These may be administratively simple, but they are both inflationary and yield no return to the government. Shared equity models have been recently attracting growing interest among Australian housing policy analysts and governments. Probably the most extensive and most in-depth experience of this type of approach can be found in the UK, although the UK's largest venture of this kind, the Help to Buy scheme, was motivated more by the desire to support the construction industry rather than to facilitate first home ownership. A form of first home buyer assistance highlighted by this research as practiced in some comparator countries, but less familiar in Australia, is the enabling of intermediate tenure housing, as exemplified by Finland's right of occupancy and part ownership models. This is another potential means of easing lower income households into a form of housing ownership that could be profitably further investigated by Australian governments. Not only in Singapore, but also in other comparator countries, including Canada, Ireland and England, home ownership policies, including first home buyer assistance, is to some extent framed within broader national housing strategies. Since it lacks any such overarching framework, Australia is out of step here. This links to the wider reality that we cannot hope to fulfil aspirations for sustainable growth in home ownership solely through the adoption of more effective first-home buyer assistance mechanisms. Such measures are associated with the more general aim of enhancing housing affordability. However, this objective is in tension with the dominant theme of home ownership policy to facilitate wealth accumulation through asset ownership. While the major tax and social security policy sessions that support wealth accumulation continues to be treated as sacrosanct, measures that aim to assist first home buyer access and affordability will achieve very little. So some really important messages here. The current structures for helping first home buyers in Australia are actually unfair. They support the wrong people very largely, and really have a tendency to lift prices. So the lack of this broader strategic framework and the issue of just focusing on tactical solutions are really part of the problem. But of course the question is that going to change? Is there any appetite at government, either at the state or the federal level, to have a more strategic view of how to deal with housing? Well, judging by the past few years and the many different inquiries that have been undertaken, there's no appetite at all. So we will end up with these very tactical processes that benefit a few, benefit the wrong people very largely, and cost the taxpayer a lot. The home buyer process, the first home buyer schemes are a con. I'm Martin North from Digital Finance Analytics. Many thanks for watching, and I'll see you again next time.